Saturday, November 19, 2011.
I'd like to welcome you to the Financial Planning Workshop, and I'm Erwin Haught, and I'd like to introduce Paul Ziambo, who's with Edward Jones, and take it away.
All right. I prefer to stand, so, and first thing is stop me at any time or if you want to ask a question. I have a wonderful Kentucky accent.
So,
so if you hear a word that doesn't sound like what the way you're used to hearing it, feel free to say, what did you mean? Or what are you saying? Then I'm blessed a little bit to have a probably slightly wide vocabulary. I'm sure I'd replace that word for another word. Unless I can't. But in essence, yes, I grew up in Zambia, and that's in Southern Africa. The biggest joke that everybody says is, how in the world does a person who grew up in Africa come and talk about finance, or later on manage finances in the United States? It's supposed to be the other way around. I was privileged growing up to be a son of a preacher. So when the time came for me to start a life on my own, I decided to come to the United States, pursued a degree in finance, and I've worked in the financial services sector since then. I've branched out a little bit, but for the most part, I've been in financial services with my career that spreads 15 years. Six of those years have been with Edward Jones, as a financial advisor. When we talk about financial planning, usually if there are six seminars going on and there's a financial planning seminar going on, it'll be the least populated seminar. Many people don't like it because sometimes it sounds like it's psychology. People tend to think you're going to take people on the guilty trip of why didn't you do that? Or show them how miserable their future looks like, or show them how much financial mistakes they have made. We are not going to do that, but what we are going to do is probably just start with some basics of managing our finance. Unfortunately, we cannot run away from finance because it is probably this, depending on who you are, the second or probably the third most important thing in your life. For most people, the number one thing that they put forward in their lives could either be a religious belief or their family, or could be religion, family. But family is extremely important to all of us. Then the second thing to most people that is very important to everybody is your health. That's why when I was growing up, my dad said, if you choose not to tell me everything about your life, make sure you tell the doctor everything about your life. Tell the doctor the truth. You can't lie to the doctor. Because that's very fundamental. If I lie to the doctor that I have a headache, when in actual sense what's paining is my foot, the doctor will help me with my head. So that's the most, and then the third most important thing in life is money. Every philosopher knows how important money is, and money is very, very crucial. Now, because money is crucial, and yet a very an asset that we could easily either accumulate or waste, we tend to avoid talking about it or thinking about it. We tend to avoid spending time about it, but it's just as important to us as our health is. In fact, they say your money may sometimes determine your health. As a financial advisor, I deal with a lot of regular people. I don't deal with the billionaires, so I'm going to talk regular things that regular people deal with. The concept of financial planning is supposed to be a very simple thing, because what we are supposed to do, or what everyone is supposed to do, and the first concept that we'll look at is You want something that is tailor-made to your needs. How do you tailor-make something that meets your needs? Is first, what you need to do is to, number one, establish where you are today. And how do you establish where you are today? The first thing you want to look at is your dwelling. If you own the house, look at your mortgage. Am I paying the right interest rate? Am I paying enough on it? Am I making the right payment? At what point will I completely own this house? If you are renting, is this the equivalent amount of rent that I'm supposed to be paying for the place where I'm dwelling? Does it make sense for me to continue owning instead of renting instead of owning, or owning, or does it make sense for me at this stage in life to own a house, or maybe I should just stay renting? Three things I commonly see. I see people who are at the age in life where they're supposed to be downsizing go buy a huge house. I also see people who are the age in life when they're supposed to buy a house, continue to rent a house, and there's no reason why they should not buy a house. And then I also see people who are supposed to have no business owning a house, buy a house. So that's very crucial, because the decision you make if you choose to buy or own a house, remember, if you bought $150,000 house in a 30-year mortgage, and you paid towards your mortgage dollar for dollar at a 5% rate, you're talking about paying back the bank $375,000 in 30 years. That's a lot of money. So you need, that decision has to be made very, very seriously and should be looked at. Are we doing the right thing in our mortgage? The second thing that you want to know where you are is you gotta look at your cash flow, the emergency cash. Every business does two things. Very important to every business. If you hear a company's on sale, a company's starting or what, the first thing they look at is their balance sheet. They create a balance sheet. What do we own? What do we owe? The second most important thing, sometimes we think is the income statement, but in essence, the income or loss statement, in essence, the most important thing is the cash flow. How much money is coming into the company? How much money is going out of the company? Should we go borrow money from the bank so that we can satisfy our organization? Should we take some of the money we have and put it in the bank for a rainy day? Your cash flow is very, very important. And by cash flow, in financial planning for individuals, the most important thing we look for is what we call emergency cash. How much is, and let's not use numbers or in general, what have you heard about emergency cash? Or how much is a good amount to have in emergency cash?
I've heard 3 months to 6 months.
3 months to 6 months.
That's what I've heard too.
Oh, were you asking about duration of time or how much money is good to have?
Let's say duration and time. How much money?
Duration and time.
3 to 6 months at least.
3 to 6 months.
I've heard at least that, and some people even say as much as a year.
Yes. Do you know why it used to be, do you know why they said 3 to 6 months? Or why they say a year?
Probably because of how the economy is, and so many people are unemployed and time to get back on their feet.
You use the very right word. Generally, what emergency cash, did you want to say something?
I think actually a year makes more sense, because you want to, I mean, in 6 months, you could run out of money very easily, and then 6 months later, like say you want to do something at Christmas time, and then after 6 months goes by, you run out of money.
Right. Right.
Then you're in trouble.
Exactly. Well, the main idea of emergency cash was, initially it used to be 3 months. Have 3 months pay in emergency cash. What that means is, in essence, if I lost my job today, if you lost your job, or if you lost your means of income, at least have 3 months, because it took 3 months for someone to get back on their feet and back in a job. Then it moved from 3 to 6 because, well, it began to take about between 98, 99, it began to take a little longer to get a job. Now it's even taking much longer. So now I've had 1 year. I've actually had 3 years. I've heard somebody say, have 3 years of emergency cash.
Yeah, but how realistic is that?
Exactly. Even 1 year, how realistic is that?
Yeah.
I mean, for regular folks, for the majority of the people that I talk to, incomes range from $40,000 a year, to about $500,000 a year. So for a person who's making $40,000, to ask them to raise, to have $40,000 sitting in cash, might not be an easy thing to do if they're coming from zero, but it probably for the person who's making $500,000, that's an easy thing to do. In essence, emergency cash, I think, should be based on you. You as a person should decide how much emergency cash you want to own. Now, here's why I say so. For example, when I get a young person right out of college, has just moved out of his mother's house, no children, nothing around, nobody around him, and he says, well, I gotta raise 1 year's salary for emergency cash, I know one thing. If he lost his job, he goes back to his mama's house. And because he has a capability to go to his mother's house, maybe 3 to 6 months would be good emergency cash for him. I also look at somebody who has 4 kids, maybe living in his own house, then how much would be the right emergency cash for them? We'll look at what kind of fallback mechanisms do they have. In other words, I'm saying nobody should come to you and say, have $10,000 or have 6 months or 8 months of paycheck. You are the best teacher for that. You can say how much money you prefer to hold as a fallback because of eventualities in life. For example, for a person who is on government help or receiving a government income, let's not even call it somebody who's receiving a government income, like Social Security, disability income, your desire to keep a huge emergency cash may probably be negated because you have a fallback of that the income will not go away. But there are some other things that we need to look at in an emergency fund. You want to look at, supposing there was a fire, supposing there was a... In other words, emergency cash is crucial, but that should be tailor-made to you. There shouldn't be a standard number that is set for you to set up an emergency cash. So we talked about homeownership, we talked about emergency cash. The other thing that is also very crucial to look at is debt. Credit cards. Car payments may not be very relevant here. College loans.
Yeah, college loans are huge these days.
Yes.
Yeah, they are.
Yes, they are. Anybody still paying back college loans or school loans?
Just graduated. Last year.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But the question of debt is a crucial and a very important thing. Now, I grew up in a cash society, so I come to this discussion as an alien. I grew up in a society where if you can't afford it, you don't buy it. And then when I came to the United States, somebody said, oh, here is a credit card. And I say to them, what is that? They say, you can go take this, go buy yourself as many things as you want, and you pay the piper later. Believe me, that didn't go down very well. So debt is another very, very crucial thing. So you got home ownership here, you got your cash flow, your emergency cash, and under emergency cash, you decide how much is good for you to hold in for emergencies. The other thing is also how to manage your debt. In other words, credit cards are probably some of the best things and some of the most scary things at the same time. If you look at a credit card, the credit card was designed to make money. The credit card company was designed to make money out of the merchant, not out of you, not out of the user. The merchant is supposed to pay the existence of the credit card. Then they learned that they can also charge you interest and started making more money on interest than they make on the merchant. Because every time that card is swiped, Visa makes money. MasterCard makes money. And everybody, DiscoverCard makes money. It's not supposed to be making money on interest. That's gravy for them. And the truth is that if you look at a credit card, normally, if we follow the rules of it, is that if you, whatever you put on a credit card, you paid in full, guess what? There's no interest. If we put $50 on a credit card, the bill comes for $50, and you pay that $50 before the due date, no interest, no finance charge, no nothing. Debt, go ahead.
So you're out of luck in that case. Is that?
Well, then we have a problem. Two things will happen. Because let's say you put $500 on a credit card, and at the end of the month they send you a bill. So let's use November 1, I put $500 on a credit card. On December 1, the credit card company will send me a bill showing $500 with a minimum payment, and I'm just going to guess, of say $25. Okay? That $25 or $500 is due January 1 or December 30th. So in essence, I have used the credit card's money on November 1 and I have to pay it back by December 30th. I'll have used their $500 for free for almost 59 or 60 days. However, if on November 30th I don't have the entire $500, but I end up giving them $25, I fulfilled their need, and therefore they don't have to report me to the credit card. However, on the remaining $475, I have to pay interest at a given rate. Now, supposing I had not paid that $25 as well, then on the entire $500, I have to pay interest at a given rate. Usually, credit card companies will also increase your interest rate. And they also charge you a late fee. So you end up having to pay more fees than you actually asked for. That's how people get in trouble with the credit cards.
Yeah, on the other side of it, I know there are some credit card companies that are starting to charge you if you don't use the card.
Those are some of the things to look at. Some cards will have an annual fee. Some card now. The banks had started with debit cards to start charging $5 for a debit card. They've quickly gone back because things were not looking right in that direction. But the key thing I'm saying is that it's very important for someone to manage their debt. Now, if you have an out of control debt situation, what I would recommend is it's important to sit one on one with an expert. Most financial advisors will sit down with you and try to restructure that debt or help you get out of that debt. Another important thing to have, and I don't know how much family we have here, but another important thing to look at, the third point that I want to look at on where you are today is catastrophic needs, problems, unforeseen situations. God forbid, if something would happen to you, how many people's life would get changed completely? For example, I have two kids. And forgive me, I'm a preacher's son, I'd mentioned that, so I'll use words like God forbid or God bless on no religious intentions intended, but that's how I talk. You know, when you're born in a garage, you don't become a car, but you have characteristics of a car. So, but God forbid, as I'm talking here, something happened and I dropped dead and you said, my God, this guy was just talking to us 2 minutes ago. You will sympathize with my family, but 2 children's lives will be changed completely. I have a daughter and I have a son. Those two lives will be changed completely. I have to prepare for that unforeseen situation. Most of us, we are mandated in the state of Ohio to have car insurance. Most of us insure our homes. We have homeowners insurance. Most of us insure a lot of things, but we forget to insure our lives. If you have wives, children, or anything, you can buy insurance. And insurance could be bought in 2 ways. It can be bought as term. Life insurance can be bought as term. Life insurance can be bought as permanent. Same concept. It's like renting or owning a house. Just like we said, you sit down, have somebody evaluate, should you own a permanent insurance, should you own a term insurance. I like the financial commentators on TV, because one of them will come and say, forget permanent insurance, just buy term insurance because it's cheap. I also like the commentators on radio who say, buy permanent insurance because you have it forever. They all got it wrong, because you can't tell someone, I can't walk to you today and say, you need permanent insurance. I can't walk to you and say, hey, you need term insurance. You buy insurance depending on what needs you have. So right now my children are 13 and 10. Guess what? My needs are bigger than the person whose children are 21 and 25. He probably may not need insurance to cover his children's education. So that should be tailor-made to you. My point is, sit down with an expert that you can trust, and they will not just be forcing you to buy something that makes them more money. The beauty of the firm that I work for, Edward Jones, is that we master the art of meeting with people one-on-one and creating a plan that fits that person's mood. So that's basically what. The next thing about catastrophic need to prepare for is to also think that in the event something would happen to me where I cannot look after myself, but I'm still alive, I'm still here, I cannot do certain things, will I need to go into a nursing home? Will I need to live in assisted care? Will I need that? If there was money available, it's important to plan for that as well. Then there is the whole big story of retirement. How do you prepare for retirement? If you've noticed, I keep saying you've got to have something that is tailor-made for you. That's basically what I am saying. The first important thing about retirement is it's never too late, because retirement depends on what you want to do when you don't get income. Now, there are all sorts of incomes in the United States, particularly. We get some of us receive disability insurance, some of us receive Social Security income, and how that income pans out depends on what terms the government is giving to you. But it's also important to start putting something aside to provide for what the money you cannot receive from the government is. It's never too late. But usually in retirement they say an early bird catches the worm. The earlier you start, the better. And unfortunately, we cannot cry about yesterday. We can only worry about what we're capable of doing today and going forward. There's a concept of dollar cost averaging. The concept is very simple. It says if you chose and decided to start putting an X amount of dollars per month or per week or every 2 weeks, whichever is convenient for you, normally from your paycheck, or if you decided to start putting that amount away every month, let me ask a question. What would be a good number, what would be a good amount to put away on a monthly basis?
On a good day, you say?
Yeah. What would be just a number? Let's pull a number from the air.
5% of your income.
Okay. 5% of your income.
That'd be a variable.
Yes.
Truthfully, it's solely dependent on your income and what you have available after you pay all your expenses. But you have to make a plan what that's going to be.
All right.
I would try 10%.
10%.
If it will work.
Or if you're employed and the company has a matching plan, put in enough to get their full max.
Oh, that's a big one.
That's very big.
Put enough to get the full match. Most companies today do between 3% and 6% of your contribution, they'll match. Some do nothing. It depends on where you work. The first place on where you can save money for retirement is whatever plan your employer provides, 401k, 403b, whatever plan your employer provides, particularly if your employer provides the matching. I'm a financial advisor, I'll tell you this. I'd like everybody's money to come into my branch because I get paid for their money coming in. But the first thing I tell everyone is, do you have a 401k at work? And if you do, how much is your employer matching? Because whatever money I can make, I can't make the free money that the employer gives. That's the number one place to start. But we say it's at 5%, and the concept of a 401k is very nice. So let's say I'm getting 10% or whatever percentage. So let's say I have my financial calculator here. Let's say I'm getting $500 per week, and I'm putting aside 10% of that, which is $50. So if I'm putting aside $50 per month, per week, and I continue to do that on monthly basis, I continue to do that year after year, what happens is this. Normally you'll be putting that money into a mutual fund or a stock, company stock or something. Here is what happens. What happens every day you hear about the market?
Up and down and up and down and up and down.
Fluctuating.
I'm going to tell you a secret. The market can do three things, only three things. It can go up, it can stay where it is, and it can go down. Sometimes people want to look so smart, especially the people on television or on radio, because they want to tell you how much of a genius they are, how they can predict the market. They know squat. I'm sorry to say it that way. I hope squat is a good word. It's not a bad word.
Just fine.
Okay. Because the market, every day we wake up, can do three things. It can go up, it can stay where it is, and it can go down. There's just like nature is, it's morning, it's midday, it's evening, it's a night. Just like that. The same thing the market can do. But we're going back to the concept of putting a $50. Because the market can go up and down, if you are dollar cost averaging into the market, two things you do. One of the things that you do is you get a chance to invest when the market is up. Guess what? You get a chance to invest when the market is where it is. And you also get a chance to invest when the market is down. And because you have a chance to do any of those three, the person who is investing consistently will catch it at three different prices, tends to have money, more money, than the person who is looking for a best shot to invest when it's either very low or that, because in most cases, they tend to invest when it's high. So it's behavior of putting something away. Again, that percentage of how much you should put away, my suggestion would be put as much as you can away and sit down with an expert that would say, okay, this is how much you can put away. You can put money away for retirement usually two ways. You can put it away pre-tax, you can put it away after tax. The advantage of pre-tax is that you don't get to pay for that for those taxes today. Therefore, you tend to have a chance to put away a little bit more if you play with your budget very well. The disadvantage of that is that when you come to take that money out, you will pay the taxes. The disadvantage of putting money pre-tax, the government tends to have a little bit more rules. Sometimes you have to reach a certain age. Sometimes you have to be below. In essence, but you gotta put that money away. Then the other thing that is very, very important with financial planning is having to prepare for your estate. Now, estate consideration is crucial. You need to have a will or a trust or something. You need a financial document that says, God forbid, if something happens to me, this goes to him, to him, to him. Even if you don't have anything, you need to have a will. Now, how you write a will, I don't know. That's not in my area of expertise. I'm no lawyer. Some people have asked me, I have seen something on LegalZoom. I've seen something on the computer. I've seen this. I have seen that. I don't know which one is the best because I'm not an expert on any of that, but have something written down. Now, from a layman's perspective, I would tell you this. If two people write down something, if I write down something today and somebody witnesses that, it means something in the eyes of the court. So if I wrote down today, I say, I'm leaving everything to my wife and my children and nobody else but these three. If I wrote it down, I asked Erwin, I said, Erwin, you're my friend. Sign this thing with me. Erwin signs that with me. And somebody after I'm dead comes up and said, Paul had written this. Then I ask Erwin, I said, did he? And Erwin says, yes, he did.
And I'll say, no, I couldn't read it.
But guess what? It could be admissible in a court of law. I say this is a layman talking.
Sure.
Don't take what I just said to the bank. But all I'm saying is have something written down. It's only good to do that right away. Because we don't know what's gonna happen in 2 hours. We don't know what's gonna happen tomorrow. We don't know what's gonna happen next year. So write it down. Have something written down. That's important. Your estate, it may be worth $700. It may be worth $1 million. It may be worth $2 million. Usually we think it's the rich people that gotta write things down. No, it's everybody. You have put something away. Write it down. Write down. Because when it goes downtown, it becomes very complicated. In other words, you don't want somebody else to make the decisions you should have made. Let me sum up here real quick, and then we can talk about anything, any questions, something outside. But the things I was interested in was that I said, look at your home ownership. Look at your dwelling. In other words, do you need to rent? Do you need to look at your dwelling? Does that make sense? Because that takes a call of your income. If in your lifetime you're going to make X amount of dollars, your lifetime, a substantial amount of that money will go to where you live. So whether you need to rent or own. The next thing I said is deal with your emergency money. What's the right number? Sit down with an expert or sit down even with yourself. You can work that number out. The next thing is deal with the question, is a question of debt. Is it basically cash flow? How much money is coming into the household? How much money is going out? If more money is going out than is coming in, we got a problem. Then I say catastrophic needs. Prepare, at least have some form of insurance. Every form of insurance is important, but have some form of insurance. Most of us try to focus on homeowners insurance. Most of us try to focus on renters insurance. Most of us tend to focus on car insurance. But we should also look at, how is my life going to affect other people? If you got family, need to get some life insurance as well. That tends to be the forgotten story. Then retirement. I'm suggesting that it's important, no matter how much you have, to do a dollar cost averaging. Have something taken out of your pay, put it aside. Whether it's 10%, 2%, whatever that percentage is, put that aside. Then finally, it's very important for us to make sure that we have a written document. How that's for the other is for the lawyer. But we need to have a written document that says, in the event I'm unable to speak, this and this and this and this should be done. Who should pull the plug? Who should, when the plug should be, and all those things. Let's have something written down. It makes life easier for those left behind. That's what I had in mind. I hope you are not expecting me to talk about how beautiful the market is. We can talk about that, but there are certain things that we tend to overlook, especially us who are in the financial world. We try to tell you to predict how markets would be and forget the basic concepts. There are a lot of financial advisors around the world, in the country, in Ohio. There's a set of financial advisors I'm very familiar with, and they work at the place where I work, Edward Jones. The beauty about Edward Jones is, from its design, it was designed for regular people. So we're not chasing the biggest account in town. We're not chasing the biggest company in town. We were made to deal with regular people. And so if you ever look at Edward Jones, there is an Edward Jones literally on every corner of the road, or maybe that's an exaggeration. But there's two, three Edward Jones offices around the country. We have two people in each office. In some cases, you find three, four people, but we have a very small number of people working in each office. The idea was for us to deal with regular people. In other words, we went for a market niche that was different from every financial advising company. Those folks tend to be very patient and to pay a lot of attention to people, the Edward Jones guys, because you are not just a number at Edward Jones, you are an individual that they will focus on. I would say, if you have any area that you said, well, maybe I got to talk to someone about that, maybe I got to talk to someone about this, visit your local Edward Jones office. If you checked the directory or anything, there is at least an Edward Jones office in your neighborhood. Call. Yes.
You'd made some reference to, like, what to do with the money, like, before you die, who the money should go to, whatever. When would you think, and when, in your opinion, is the best time to make a decision like that?
Today.
Where you're going to have your plan.
And here's why I'm asking you. If you can tell me the day you will die, I would say do it the day before that day.
Right. Yeah.
Do you know when that will be?
Of course not.
Exactly. That's why I'm saying today. So remember, when you make a decision who to pass on what you got, that's not something that is cast in stone and is extremely solid. So let's say, for example, here's a progression of my life. At one point, I was a single guy running around town, trying to catch every excitement that was in the city. No children, no nothing. Guess what? At that point, who was my next of kin? My young brother. Okay? Then I decided to settle down. I got married. Who became my next of kin?
Spouse.
My spouse. Then I began to have children. Now, and it was my wife, and then I had a contingent beneficiary. If something happened to both me and my spouse, the contingent beneficiary was my brother. Now, I have children. Who's my contingent beneficiary?
Your kids.
So, yeah. Goes to my spouse and my children. Let's say I wasn't fun enough and my wife decided to leave me. Guess what happens? I'm going to change the beneficiary to somebody. In other words, what I'm saying is that you need to have something for today, and if things change in your life, you update that information. Very crucial thing to do. In fact, even on your 401ks, if your life has changed drastically, if you have any account, retirement account or anything, make sure you go to check who the beneficiaries are. If you got life insurance, make sure you know who the beneficiary is. Because one of the worst things to do is to have your money go to a spouse or somebody that you are no longer, that you detest today, but they were very loved ones many years ago. So we need to update that. But yeah, the answer is you got to have that ready today. And usually it's the people that are young that tend to think, I shouldn't have anything written down.
I should add, getting back to Edward Jones, that their statements are available in Braille.
In Braille,
which
yes.
is wonderful. And probably large print, too, but I don't know that for
yes,
a fact.
Yes, they are large print as well. So did I answer your question?
Yeah.
So, today.
You think? I would know.
Yes. I'd say as soon as possible, have something written down. Now, the content of how that thing is written down, I am no expert. I'll leave that to those who are experts on how to write that. It might be a very informal document, it might be a very formal document. I'm not the best person to say how.
Something else to remember if you're employed, and your employer is providing you with 401ks or life insurance, if you have a life change, like you get divorced, don't forget to change your beneficiary with your employer. Because we've had cases at my company a retiree will die, and the life insurance beneficiary is not his current spouse.
Exactly.
Because they forgot about it, the fact that they had life insurance through an employer.
You're right. That's why I'm saying you want to check all your documents to make sure that the money is going to the people whom you love, because one of the worst things, and if there's an afterlife, is for you to see your money going to the person who you hated with a passion. You may not even hate them, but whom you did not intend to have the money go to. So it's important to do an audit every year. Whether there's been no major change, just audit. Look through all your documents to make sure everything is in place. Life insurance at work, 401k plans, bank accounts, everything. Make sure there is an ability to transition. Because, for example, if you have some CDs at the bank, those are POD. They're paid on death. So you want to make sure that everything is going to the right person. Is there a need to avoid probate? If so, how do you do that? Those are crucial things.
Okay. Any other questions?
If there are audience here, we have somebody who just graduated from college, so she's starting off new, right?
Yes.
And young?
Uh-huh.
I have a son that's in college.
In college?
You're middle of the road. And I'm over the hill. You know, kids are gone, happily retired.
So it's just us three in here? Is that all?
Yep,
basically.
There's
five of us here.
Yes, we also want
to. Who else here? I think I missed the introductions. Who all is here?
Erwin Hott. I'm the sort of moderator, whatever.
Yes, of course. Anybody else?
Then there's
Danny.
Patty,
yes.
And Sam.
Sam.
Yeah, and I didn't get your name.
Sam.
No, her name.
Who, me? Oh, yes. Annie.
Annie?
Uh-huh.
Most people wish they could recover back the years they had when they were just getting out of college. Because most mistakes are made around that time.
In college or just out of college?
Just out of college.
Of course.
Starting from college, I would say. But usually just getting out of college. Because people tend to buy a bigger house than they need during that time, and then they're stuck with it. Especially people who graduated between 2001 and 2007. Because the house at that time, I mean, if you could fog a mirror, you could buy a house.
Yeah, but Paris could have bought a house.
Exactly. So most mistakes tend to be made during that time, and what you do is you spend so many years recovering from the mistakes, and then by the time you have level footing, now you're beginning to build, and there's maybe major changes happening in your life. So a good start, like out of college, the basic concept we talked about here, put something away from every paycheck. An expert will tell you what the best amount is, but even if it's not the best amount, put something away. All the parents, we have about 350 households we work with in our office. For every parent, I tell them, as their kids are getting out, you know, 16 years old and so on, I say, bring them in. Teach them the first concept of putting something away. You put something away from every paycheck, it just becomes a behavior. One of the things I've seen is some of the most miserable financial situations are not people who make less money. It's people who make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
They have a six-figure salary going in, but they have a six-figure expense.
Oh, what kind of expense?
Six-figure expense.
Okay. I'm not sure what that means.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. What that means is they're bringing in $100,000 and they're spending $120,000.
So they're spending more than what they're bringing in. And where does that extra $20,000 come from?
Exactly, it's financed by debt.
Okay.
Yeah.
So usually we all want. Most people say, "Oh, I would do that after I start making a lot of money." It's actually the concept should be on whatever penny you get. There are five things. Maybe in conclusion, I'll say this. There are five things you should do and probably shouldn't do them in. Depending on who you are, you could do them in this order or in a different order. But number one, you want to pay Uncle Sam. Pay your taxes. Like it or not, they'll come for it. That's number one thing, you want to pay Uncle Sam. Most of us are privileged because the money gets taken out from our paychecks. But you want to pay Uncle Sam whatever belongs to Uncle Sam. Number two, you want to pay yourself. 10%, 2%, whatever. Pay yourself, put that money away. Now, you'll be surprised why I've used it in this order, but pay yourself. Number three, pay your debts. In other words, your cost of living, whatever, pay that. Pay your debts. Every bill that you incur, pay it. Number four, and some people put number four as number two or number one, but that's important. Maybe number five would be number four and number one. But number four, I'd say, make sure that you have fun. Live your life. In other words, after you've put something away and you need to go and have a nice breakfast, go do it. Because tomorrow is not guaranteed. You always have today. I have a lot of people who want to put everything away for tomorrow. What if you die today? So have fun. Use your money. Use some of what you get. Use it today. And number five, give to charity. Now, some people will replace that by church, and because they'll replace that by church or give to God or anything, then it may become number one and you can push the rest that way. But give to charity, give to something, commit to something. It may not be dollar-wise, it may be your time. So out of those five, now you notice some people, usually people argue with me and say, why should you pay yourself before you pay your debts? Because if you discipline yourself, your debts will be less than your income. It's not an easy thing to do. But five things, very crucial. You follow that recipe, it works very well.
I can remember when our companies came out with their 401ks, we're spending all the money that we earn, right? And so, okay, I'm going to put in that 5% so I get their full match. And I did it. And pretty soon, you realize you don't miss that 5% out of your net pay. You just learn to adjust with it.
That's a huge point.
And then, every year, I increased it 1%. You hardly miss it. And eventually, I got up to where I was investing 10%. Eventually, I hit the max of
15%. Yeah.
And you don't miss it.
Usually we miss what we don't miss what we don't have.
Yeah, well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Thanks.
This is it. Thanks.